My next guest here, rain, rain, snow, whatever it takes you to walk across that parking lot, Kyle Caldwell, Executive Director for the Johnson Center.
Just like the post office.
I would hope, this is going to sound awful. I would hope you wouldn't drive from your place of work to our Eberhard Center.
No, we got a great downtown campus. Great to walk it.
Good. Just making sure we're all practicing fitness, and I know you do. Kyle Caldwell, a formal introduction, Executive Director for the Johnson Center for Philanthropy, doing great things in our own backyard. What's your elevator pitch? When I say, what is this Johnson Center? I always like to start big.
We're a center on philanthropy that helps individuals and organizations understand, strengthen, and advance philanthropy. And the neat part about our work is that we work with nonprofits, foundations, donors, the full field of philanthropy. It's really exciting work.
So many workshops you're giving and getting out into the community, and obviously knowing the trends in philanthropy for this upcoming year. And I bet that's what you want to talk about, Kyle.
Yeah, we'd love to. You know, we last year launched this 11 trends in philanthropy that was really about our critical thinking, what we're finding out in the field. And we thought, you know, why are we keeping this internal? We should really share this with the larger public. So this year, 2018, we've launched our 11 trends again. And we really see some new trends, and we see some trends that are continuing from last year.
And who should be our listening audience for this?
Well, it really does impact everyone. So those that are working in the field, nonprofits, foundation leaders, those who are volunteers, board members on foundations and nonprofits, all of them should be really interested in this. And quite frankly, some of this really impacts just any individual who wants to give.
All right, so here we are. We are spending time talking about 11 trends in philanthropy for 2018 in no particular order. What number one would you like to share?
Well, I'll just start with this idea of collective giving, which has really grown in the last few years, where people are not only finding common cause around issues, but saying, what if we brought our resources together and what would that look like? Last year alone, we saw the engagement of collecting giving groups of around 46,000 people, mostly women, who granted about $30 million in different areas that are of interest and concern to them. So we think that this is going to be a continuing trend as people really like to think about giving and actively learning together. We think that this is really a product of another trend, that we're really entering the golden age of giving, where the next generation who's going to inherit over $59 trillion in wealth are thinking differently about how they give. They think about giving it locally. They think about giving to causes that they want to be directly involved in and less about institutions. So we're thinking this is going to be really exciting to watch the millennials and all the other next geners come into philanthropy and how they're going to change the field.
Can't fight the aging process, can we?
Not at all.
Everybody's aging. It's a good thing.
Got to celebrate it.
Number three, the globalization of philanthropy, Kyle.
Well, this is really fascinating. You know, with technology, with people's interests, the world gets a little bit smaller. You can really impact things across the world. We saw that with the tsunami recovery and the disaster relief there. And we are seeing it where people are really thinking not only locally, but how does water, for example, affect other communities? We are really lucky that in Michigan we've got great sources of water. We've got the Great Lakes. In other countries, they don't have the same sort of resources, but we all have water issues. So whether it's getting access to water or getting access to clean water like we're doing here, we're seeing that this idea of issues that are both local and global really are showing up in philanthropy and how people want to give and how they want to learn.
What do you have for number four?
We think that defining this idea of place-based philanthropy is pretty interesting. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's a localist movement that we're seeing with Local First here in Grand Rapids and others, where people are really trying to see if philanthropy can happen in their neighborhood, in a place base. So take a geography and invest there and really get close to the work and see what it looks like, not just in volunteering, but in how they're thinking about giving in philanthropy. We've seen that in Grand Rapids, where there's been huge investments over decades from individuals, business leaders, and others who really want to make Grand Rapids a great community. And this idea of defining progress through place-based philanthropy has really been taking off.
Halfway through, number five I have is philanthropy's quest for equity.
This is going to be a theme that we think cuts through a number of trends where You know, when you think about philanthropy, just in raw dollars, the stock market is just booming now, and that's creating great wealth for a number of people. At the same time, we see this great crevasse, this difference between people's ability to earn income and the top level of wealth, and the gap has never been bigger. So philanthropy tries to mitigate the gap. At the same time, philanthropy is going to grow as a result of the gap of that inequity. So we're going to see, I think, a lot of effort in philanthropy to stave off the negative consequences of inequality.
There's a trend that includes inclusivity.
Yeah, we're thinking that what we've seen a lot of conversation around is how you work not only on causes, but include the community in your decision-making, those who are affected by it. And that brings, you know, the questions of who serves on nonprofit boards, who serves on foundation boards, how do we bring the community who's going to be impacted by philanthropy's actions into the decision-making about how philanthropy should work. Mm-hmm. And inclusivity, equity, inclusion, all going to be, I think, common elements that we're going to see grow in the field.
What's number seven, Kyle?
Well, this idea of we are becoming an increasingly more data-dependent community, a data-dependent field. The question is, data for what purpose? So we're seeing that these big data projects can produce a tremendous amount of data, but if you're not a good consumer of it and you aren't asking the right questions, you're going to get data that may not help you move or advance your goals. So we think there's going to be an increasingly larger focus on asking the question, data to what end, and how do we be good consumers of that data?
Number eight, new frameworks for evaluating impact.
We're really seeing that philanthropy, just moving money, people, talent, and time is not enough. That people want to know what for, what's the impact of that, and how do we measure it? And so we're seeing far more focus on people wanting to develop their frameworks for evaluating their impact. What do we want to see? How do we want to achieve it? How do we want to measure it? And not all measures are the same. So you really have to look at your goals and then design your evaluation framework around that. And there's increasingly larger focus on this, especially in the foundation community.
Number nine, a growing commitment to building nonprofit capacity. Key words here.
Yeah, we know that nonprofits are businesses, but we also know, like businesses, nonprofits need management structures, governance structures, financial structures, all of that, and marketing and program impact measures. All of that is the capacity of a nonprofit to do their work. Mm-hmm. Traditionally, that has been what we call training, technical assistance, but now we're thinking it's about building the capacity of organizations. And we, for a number of years, had been moving from, well, let's fund projects. I don't necessarily want to fund the overhead of a nonprofit. I really want to get my money to write the direct program. But what we're realizing is, well, that's great, but if you don't have the capacity, you can't do the programming. So we're seeing a growing commitment to this idea of, especially among funders, let's build the capacity of nonprofits while they work on the causes that they should be focused on. The Ford Foundation just put out a great letter from their CEO saying that, you know, you can't get into community change if you don't invest in the capacity of nonprofits.
Mm-hmm. Right, we're almost there. Two more. What's number 10?
You know, there is going to be an increasing partnership between governments and nonprofits, and we've seen that certainly here in Grand Rapids, but we're seeing it across the country where in our case here, it was about leveraging the power and the resources of government to transform and enhance the growth of Grand Rapids. We are seeing it now where nonprofits and foundations are working together with government to mitigate the Flint water crisis and some of the responses that need to be there, getting that water converted back onto the Detroit water system and helping clean up the pipes. We see it in Kalamazoo where they're creating new foundations. Donors are giving money literally to the city of Kalamazoo to do new and innovative things as long as they sort of cap the property tax growth. Those are new partnerships that we haven't seen before, and we think they're going to grow, especially as the needs grow and philanthropy becomes more and more dynamic.
All right, we're ready for number 11, Kyle Caldwell.
We've seen a real interesting push by the nonprofit segments of the nonprofit community to really push the envelope on their ability to get involved with politics, to endorse candidates. And there's been this obscure law, that was started back in the 50s and 60s called the Johnson Amendment, and that really created what we call the safe haven for nonprofits, especially 501c3 charities, that they can engage in communication, awareness, policy issues, so long as it's nonpartisan. The Johnson Amendment created that safe space. There's been a push recently, especially among faith-based organizations, to repeal the Johnson Amendment because they want to be able to endorse candidates. They want to get really clear about who they believe should be the right policymakers. And that fight, that battle about whether or not this obscure rule should be eliminated actually has big consequences because it could lead to a lot of dark money coming into charity nonprofits. So there's going to be a continuing dialogue about that, and we're going to be watching that very carefully.
I trust this list and this information, 11 Trends in Philanthropy for 2018, Kyle, is found on your website?
Absolutely, johnsoncenter.org, where you also find our upcoming leadership series, our grant writing series, our grant maker webinar series that we do in partnership with the Council of Michigan Foundations. All that's on johnsoncenter.org.
1 in 10 workers in the U.S. is employed by nonprofits and nonprofits, and that number is growing.
It is growing, and it was growing even during the Great Recession. The nonprofit employment factors are very resilient.
Great. Website is?
johnsoncenter.org.
Great. Thanks, Kyle.
Thank you.